The Earth species are dying off at an astonishing rate, and human beings could be on their way out. That's the key finding in a new study confirming that the planet is undergoing a mass extinction event. And by itself, this isn't very odd. Earth has undergone five of these mass extinctions before, the one that wiped out the dinosaurs being the most recent. But this current extinction is unique in that it's been triggered not by volcanic eruptions, asteroid impacts, or rising sea levels, but they say by us. Because of the rise of humans, the task of killing most life on Earth fell to tectonic plates, glaciers, and space rocks. But for us, it's much different. Up next, Michael Tennyson joins us, the next species, right here on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. Hey, this is a tough planet. We have had five mass extinctions. They think maybe we are headed for number six. And the causes of those, they go back to 443 million years B.C., all the way up to the last period where the dinosaurs were wiped out. And now, of course, there's that possibility of us. And here's some of the causes that occurred over these other five mass extinctions. So one study says that there could have been an ice age that simply wiped out all life. Primarily, most of it was fish life, seawater at the time. And, you know, coral reefs were obliterated and everything else. Then they talk about the possibility, there's a new theory about an exploding star may have triggered a drop in temperature, some kind of cooling again. 360 million years B.C., they said that it may have occurred in phases where so much life was wiped out. It could have been volcanic eruptions, meteor impacts could be to blame for things like that. Then they talked about the possibility of global warming, 250 million B.C. Global warming? Yep, that's what they say. And so all kinds of things have happened, low oxygen levels in the oceans as well. Let me tell you a little bit about Michael Tennyson. Michael is a science writer. He has written more than 300 stories in journals such as Discover, Scientific American, Natural Wildlife, Audubon, Science, Smithsonian, and so many more. He specializes in what one would call adventure science. He has toured the Andean cloud forests of Peru for Smithsonian, the Chilean forests to learn how global warming threatens these precious trees. He's traveled to Guatemala to study the forests and birds, and here he is on Coast to Coast. Michael, good to have you. Fascinating tonight. I'm looking forward to this.
I'm looking forward to it too, George. Thanks for having me on.
The next species. So I went through some of the extinctions we've had, which were five, which go back hundreds of millions of years ago. Why do they think we could be in number six or about ready to?
Well, they think we could be in number six for a variety of reasons. It's not only climate change, it's not only CO2, but population problems. You know, our world is we are way overpopulated. We have a situation with disease right now. I mean, we actually came out of the last century, you know, curing most disease, but now our antibiotics don't work anymore, and they're having a lot of problems with that. There's problems with soils. I mean, the soils on Earth, we actually, you know, the main reason behind all these extinctions. The main reason behind our extinction today is the fact that you know, our population has just exploded. In 1 AD we had 300 million people on Earth. In 1800 we had a billion. In 1900 we had a billion 0.6. Today we have 7 billion. We're headed towards 9 billion by the middle of the next century or this century. And 10 or 11 billion by the end of the century, and we've actually kind of reached the carrying capacity of Earth, and there's too many of us. We're a little bit like a virus. We've kind of overgrown.
Now we have had those other extinctions before, and I'm kind of baffled at how they can blame global warming hundreds of millions of years ago when, you know, there wasn't man to blame for that. I've always believed, Michael, that we're in Earth cycles and solar cycles, and that these things happen whether or not we contribute to it, not the issue, but that the Earth and these cycles have occurred and will occur.
Yeah.
What do you think of that?
I mean, really, it is true. I mean, the Earth is, if you just if we look at the extinctions, what we're looking at is the history of complex life on Earth. And complex life on Earth is about 600 million years old. And during those era, we've had, you know, we actually have almost every 100 million years a pretty good asteroid impact. Maybe not as big as the one that knocked out the dinosaurs, but that's part of the deal. We have a regular, we have a super volcano that comes up. It just regular as rain. The extinction events are they say it's global warming. What it really is, it's a CO2, but it's a carbon dioxide. You know, an excessive carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. Like not right now, they say we started the industrial age with about 280 parts per million. It's up to about 400 parts per million now. To really get into the mass extinctions, they had to get into the 1,000 or 2,000 parts per million. And but it's not a result of man driving around cars. It's a result of a natural process that happens that the volcanoes that we're on a planet that has all these big, huge patches of land, continental drifts, and they bang into each other and they make these volcanoes. And the volcanic residue, the smoke that comes out of it, is really the cause of a lot of this, a lot of the events. And all along with also with impacts by asteroids, a whole variety of things.
Michael, as we look at these extinctions, do they happen quickly or gradually?
No, they're long-term deals. They say maybe the Cretaceous extinction, in other words, the asteroid that fell out of the sky and knocked out the dinosaurs, was kind of a punctuated event. But there's also new evidence out now that they feel that when the asteroid hit one side of the Earth, it rang the whole Earth's crust, just like a bell, and that was, some scientists theorize, that was part of the reason that on the other end of the globe from the impact was the Deccan Traps, which is another massive volcanic activity that started to go at the time. So the initial impact by the asteroids was, that was a sudden real bad weekend, but the Deccan Traps was something that happened concurrently and happened for over a long time. But like the Permian extinction, which is 200, you referred to the Permian extinction, was 250 million years ago. It's the largest extinction we've had, and 90% of all species disappeared. And that one is due to carbon dioxide. You know, but it also there's also carbon dioxide causes acidic oceans, causes acid oceans to occur, and also causes sulfur dioxide emissions. And this is just a whole batch of poisonous gases that are existing in the middle of our planet.
This is what's amazing to me, Michael, is the resiliency of the planet to keep bouncing back from extinctions to where ecosystems die out. The reefs are gone, and then everything comes back, and then it dies out again. Then it comes back again. Why does it bounce back so much?
Well, I think that it's nature. I mean, it's a product of nature. I mean, I think that in my book, for my money, the man is not the be all and end all of creatures on Earth. We have a limited lifespan. You and I and Homo sapiens have a limited lifespan, but nature is really persistent. I went up to Mount St. Helens and saw some of the damage that the big volcano up there did. But they put aside a whole part of the Mount St. Helens volcanic eruption area to just see what would it take for nature just to bring it back. And it's, 30 years from it It's coming back. You know, there are small trees, there are lots of grasses, there's lots of animals, Roosevelt elk in the area. The same exists for like Krakatoa. You know, that's like what are we talking? We're talking 130 years ago, mm-hmm. in the 1880s, I think it was, and that almost leveled the whole island. And yet there's a fella from Australia there studying the life on Krakatoa now, and he says that the jungles have come back, you know, almost fully, and that it's even like other creatures from nearby islands have come in and depopulate the population. Just, you know, it's pretty much like the Galapagos. And so it's real resilient. You look at Chernobyl. I mean, Chernobyl has, you know, high amounts of radiation. They get lots of problems from the radiation, but nevertheless, there's a packs of wolves that are in that area, and they're actually feeding off a moose. And so there's this really, you know, if you just eliminate man from the picture, you know, that's it's a sad thing to say. Life has a lot of resiliency.
If we're extinct, if we go extinct, I'm not sure mankind will come back. Are you?
Well, I think that there's an opportunity for another couple of mankinds. I mean, there's 25 species. There's been 25 species of man, of early hominids, human life on Earth. And we're kind of the peak, and we're kind of causing the most problems. And but I think that there's definitely an opportunity for another species of hominid. And that was kind of part of my I took two trains of thought. I was influenced by Alan Weisman's book, The World Without Us. The idea that he went out and says, tomorrow there's no man, so how long is it going to take for man's infrastructure to come down? And talks about how long it would take to get New York to the ground, which is surprisingly fast, and all these other spots. And so what I wanted to do was I wanted to look not only at what life could be without man, you know, how it could flower and be as diverse as it once was, but also how it's possible that we could have another hominid species. And, you know, and hope comes to the rescue, hopefully, that it'll be a little bit more tolerant of Earth, a little bit more of a part of nature, rather than acting like we're the reason for nature.
Do we have enough resources on this planet? I know you were saying, you know, we're getting up to 7 billion people. That's too much. Can we handle it right now in terms of food production and things like that?
Well, that's a big thing. They think that just to go from 7 billion people to 9 billion people is actually going to take a doubling of crop production, because we have, you know, a lot of our crops go to cattle, and also we're going to need biofuels, so we have to raise crops, we have to raise grain now for fuel as well as food. And that we have to double it by the middle of the century. And I talked to Dan Richter at Duke University, and he's a soil scientist, and he was talking about how, you know, we need to double the product. And what that means is that we need to go from, like, right now we're 40% of all available land on Earth, terrestrial environments are being used for agriculture or growth of food or cattle, and we need to go to 60%, and we've already used the best 40%, so the next 20% is going to be a lot tougher. And so what happens when we get there? You know, if we get to 20% by the middle of the century, I mean, what happens after that? I went to this Rothamsted Institute in London, or north of London in England. And they talked about, they were doing a bunch of studies about just trying to get another 10% out of the land. Like, really, the big growth in agriculture have already kind of taken place, and now it's a little bit chipping away at it. And they have a 2020 goal of getting another 10%. And 10%, we need a doubling. And so what happens when we get to 10%? We take 5 seconds and clap our hands, and then we got to go right back to work. which kind of dire.
Well, with Michael Tennyson's with us, his book, The Next Species. Michael, what about the possibility that mankind simply will nuke each other and wipe each other out that way?
Well, you know, the nuclear the Bureau of Atomic Scientists has this at, 3 seconds to midnight?
Moving that clock ahead, that's for sure.
Right. You know. And it's like, you know, I read every once in a while. I just was reading something the other day that the fellow talked about how, you know, we really don't have a problem with nuclear power anymore. We don't have to worry about that. That kind of came and went. You know, it came and went as a news cycle. That's about it. It's mm-hmm. still there. I mean, we still have enough atomic nuclear bombs on Earth to wipe out all life. And we've never been in a war where we've tossed them back and forth. And there's some crazy people now that have got atomic weapons. And, you know, it's like, what do you do? I mean, that's you know, that's very possible. That's very possible. If we start throwing nuclear bombs at each other, that would, you know, that could cause a mass extinction right in and of itself.
Well, then it's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when, isn't it?
Well, I mean, you know, it's not this. It's actually a natural thing, you know. Hans-Dieter Suisse, who's the curator of paleontology, told me that 99.9% of all creatures, or 99.999% of all creatures on Earth, have gone extinct. You know, and extinction is just a natural part of the process. I mean, average mammal lasts about a million years. Average plant lasts about 10 million years. So it's just, you know, we're not everlasting. You know, life is not everlasting. We have this, you know, we're in this bubble of the printed word. And the printed word really is a functioning thing. Really only goes back a little over 2,000 years. And so we kind of think of that's our perspective of the world. And so we think of the world in that respect, and where it's, you know, hundreds of millions of years, and life is complex life is 600 million years. So it's just, you know, we have a poor perspective on time, on the planet, and what it takes for us to subsist, and what our long-term results are going to be. If we're part of nature, we're going to be extinct as well at some point or the other.
When we talk about extinction, is it 100% in that, you know, of the 7 billion humans on the planet, will we maybe get it down to 50 million and they'll try to regroup?
Well, you know, I've heard that too. And what they do is I ask a couple of biologists that idea. I mean, what is extinction? And extinction is just where the birth rates don't match the death rate. And so in that case, the population starts shrinking. And at some point, it becomes, there's so few people on Earth, it becomes difficult to mate, to find somebody to do all the things that have something to do with that.
All right, hold on, Michael. Well, hold on. We're going to come back. We'll talk more The Next Species on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back. Michael Tennyson with us, The Next Species. Michael, what is the next species? Who's going to take over the planet when we die off?
Well, you know, there's a variety of possibilities. We have, there was a fellow, Juan Enriquez, who gave a TED talk about this, about how there's been 25 different species, and we could certainly have another. And there's a lot of evidence that kind of points to the fact that, you know, that we could have another species. Scientists like to think that there are too many of us and we're too interconnected to breed another species. But there's been evidence of small changes creating another species. There was a study at UC Berkeley in the 1940s studied this small salamander that came down from Oregon, came down from the north. It hit the Central Valley, and then part of the population circled around the Central Valley in the Sierras, and part of the population circled around the Central Valley in the coastal mountains. And so it just moved on down. And when it got to the point where it was going to connect again, it could not mate with each other. And that's actually the definition of a new species. It can't mate with the last species. And so what we could get a new species from a whole variety of different things. Genetic alterations is a good one. There's a lot of pressure from parents to raise their kids the smartest and the most beautiful. And if we started using genetic alterations to actually genetic modification to actually achieve those results, we could get a super race that wouldn't necessarily want to come back and have anything to do with us. And there's also like isolation. They say there's a couple of different types of evolution. One is evolution that occurs on separate land masses, and one is evolution that occurs in areas where a population grows on the top of a mountain and it's just not capable of going down. It's not capable of surviving at the lower elevation. So you can get a single species adapting like that. So the idea being is how would we get that kind of isolation? There's a variety of ways we could get that kind of isolation. There was a book written by a couple of anthropologists at the University of Utah University, and they talked about how the European Jewish population coming up in the latter half in the 1800s and 1900s actually was isolated because of the fact that, you know, there was prejudice against them, and there was also a thought within the community that they didn't want to marry outside. And right. So that this population actually kind of got isolated, and they were also at the same time they were having to deal with a trade between Europe and Middle Easterns, and in the Mid East. And it apparently comes up to the point where they have like six times as many Nobel Prize winners as other populations. And it may be that living a life where you're in this kind of crisis situation of trying to trade between two warring factions is a great a motivator for intelligence. So how could we achieve that kind of isolation here in the modern world? You know, Google does a good job of that. I visited the Google campus up there in Palo Alto at one point for Discover magazine, and they have a campus where they pick you up in buses every day, and they take you back home, and they feed you while you're there. You have these gourmet meals, and you're allowed a day to work on your own projects so that there's some motivation. There's not like you feel like you're just doing it for the man. They get a little bit of their own time, and then now they even have like a dating service. And so, you know, there's a population of a whole species of computer geeks just because of the isolation of the Google campus. And there's other possibilities. James Barat wrote a book about the artificial intelligence, and he called it man's last invention. And his whole idea was that if you allow artificial intelligent machines, computers, to actually perform the function of trying to make themselves better, if you turn that over to them, they could easily go by you in a few generations real fast, be a lot smarter than man. And so, and you got to realize that the majority of people on Earth that are doing stuff with artificial intelligence are really military operations. You know, that's the large money behind that effort. You know,
Michael, you had said earlier that the definition of extinction includes breeding versus dying, and if it's negative, you're in extinction mode. In our case, we're going up in population. So how could they say, you know, we're headed for another mass extinction when we're going up, not down?
Well, Georgi Galsi, and I'm not sure I'm pronouncing that right. He was a Russian biologist in the 1920s. He did this classic experiment with food, and what he did is he mixed a half a gram of oatmeal with different types of organisms, put a little water in there, and kind of set it aside there on the flat bottom test tubes in a lab. They stand up real nice, and then he went away and came back to try to figure out what was going on. As the organism, what happened was it was kind of a slow growth of the organisms as they start feeding on the oatmeal. But then they're also at some point it reaches a point where it just suddenly starts shooting up, that the consumption of the food gets a lot faster. And what happens in all, he did this with a bunch of different microorganisms, and it was all the same pattern. If they ran straight up, just like we're doing right now, and then what happened is they hit the inflection point at the top, and then they go straight down. So I mean, it's like we haven't got to the straight down yet. I mean, I think we're just running out. We're running out of resources. You know, we're having problems with water. We're having problems [S2] Sure. [S1] With soil. We're having problems with food. We're having problems with all our war regalia. So that's what it is. I mean, I think it's something that eventually is going to come to pass.
Okay, let me ask you this. I mean, we have had stories on this show, Michael, where the elitists, the Illuminati, call them what you want, have always wanted to reduce the Earth's population from its 7 billion down to 500 million. They think that's a number that is manageable, that'll keep this planet going. What are we doing wrong here? I mean, are they right? Should we reduce the population down to a half, 500 million people?
No, I don't think that's the answer. I mean, I think the answer is just what the answer is the answer to realize that that first of all, we're not everlasting. We have to hold back on population growth. There's various ways we could hold back on population growth. Certain countries have the full birth control, abortions, everything to hold back on population growth. In China, they actually give you supplements if you have fewer children, costs you to have another child. In some areas, some areas religion is against it, but there's some things that can be done. They're finding that with rising economies, that if women are given the ability to go back to school and to work in the workforce, they put off childbirth a while longer. So, maybe that's one of the things. I mean, I that's what I'm kind of, I think we should have a rational policy on controlling our population. And we could, I think there's still time to stop. I mean, there was there was actually just a report out real recently about, when I first did this, I did this book, The Next Species, The Future of Evolution and the Aftermath of Man. It came out in March from Simon Schuster. And at the point when I first was working on this book, I was looking at reports from Anthony Bernofsky at the University California, Berkeley. And he was stating that we were... we're getting near a mass extinction event, that we could get there within 300 to 1200 years. There's just a brand new report out from Paul Ehrlich at Stanford that's also co-signed by Bernofsky that says we're already there. And they did is they did a big study, and this was a fellow out of the Autonomo University in Mexico. It's their big school. And they look back over 500 years to see how many extinctions we've had, and they compared that with a normal background rate. We only lose two or three species every 100 years, and we're losing 100 every 100 years. So we're actually I don't know if that's exactly the statistics they had, but what they did say is that there's loss of species on Earth is 100 times faster than the normal background rate. So that's what we're doing right now, and we have to control population. I don't think we blow them all back to the Stone Age, although there's a fellow out of University of Washington, Peter Ward, feels that man will last for another 700 million years until we get to the planet Earth gets to about where Mars is, and that's no longer habitable. And but he thinks we'll last the whole time, but every once in a while we'll be blown back to the Stone Age. And but I run into too many people that think that if your population goes south, which I really believe we're on the verge of, that at the end you start. It's like the Neanderthal. The Neanderthal just dwindled away at the very end as another species came in. And that's kind of what I'm thinking of is another species comes in to replace us. It's more adaptable to us. It's possibly more intelligent. Maybe a little bit more ecological, although they don't hold out a lot of hope for that. They figure that any species is a new species will try to survive in its own environment, will try to do the its own environment a little bit better than the last one. But if that includes, holding back on resource consumption and maybe having a more intelligent approach to population, I don't know. We could have some. It could get better. Either way, it could get better. It could get better if man disappears and nature takes over. We could get some glorious places again. And I talked about that in the book, Palmyra Atoll, which is this nature conservancy in the middle of the Pacific Ocean. Captain Ferdinand? I can't remember the last name, but he showed up at Palmyra Atoll in the late 1700s, and there was his boat rowed into the harbor, and the sharks are biting at the oars, and when he gets to the land, he starts to fish, and he fills his whole boat with fish while his men are up on the shore getting coconuts. And the life that he's found at the Palmyra Atoll actually still exists, and other environments like that could actually return. And there's also the La Brea Tar Pits in Los Angeles. They're in the middle of Hollywood. You go down deep enough and you run into a tar pit area that represents life 30,000 years ago. And then there's one that represents 40,000 years ago. And the diversity of animals, there was like 20 or 30 different species of canids. And you had giant, you had camels and horses and elephants and the North American lion. And several species of cats, and just a whole, and in Los Angeles at the time, I don't know if they came up with this, La Brea people had come up with this idea that a little bit more like Monterey, and I don't know if that's just wishful thinking, but, life could really be neat. We could actually come to, we could go back to the biodiversity that we used to have.
But that'll be without us, though, Michael, right?
Yeah,
so it can't
us,
be that neat.
Or a more intelligent us.
Do you think that's a possibility, realistically, that our species will die off in a more intelligent breed, like we were the Neanderthals to modern man, that something else will replace us? Do you think that kind of evolution could occur?
It's happened 25 times on Earth, why not?
Well, so when they say mass extinction, they're simply saying mass extinction of a certain species as opposed to the planet?
Oh, well, they define a mass extinction as 75% of all species disappearing.
All species that are on the planet at the time.
Yeah, at the time. So, and those are treacherous statistics, but that could still include us. That could include a lot. And what it is what they talked about is the extinction intersections, or the frontiers of change, and these extinction events have, you know, are grand opportunities for change. They're grand opportunities to get a whole new set of animals and a whole new set of plants. And this is what's happened with these extinction events. I went to Capitan Reef in Guadalupe National Park in New Mexico, or actually it's eastern Texas, western Texas, mm-hmm. right near the New Mexico border. And I went up with Joanna Hurst into the Capitan Reef area, and you're climbing this pretty steep mountain with all these switchbacks, and finally you get to a point where the rocks start looking kind of weird, and she stops and pours a little water on them, and all of a sudden you see that, oh my God, there's all these creatures in these rocks. And they're actually, and what's really amazing is there's like, you know, there's, they had these creatures, crinoids, that were like plants that, you know, that were kind of eating, you know, meat-eating plants that kind of tied to the ground. And they had sponges, and they had different types of shellfish. And they had a shark that had a spiraling mouth. Its teeth were in kind of a spiral. They had a lot of different, and none of that stuff exists anymore. And you look at these little, you look at these fossils and you realize nothing like that exists on Earth anymore. And she took me back to her, office and showed me all her displays. And she says, none of that's here anymore. You know, so there are great opportunities for change. There are great opportunities for new species, and they tend to be better.
You seem excited that we might be leaving.
Well, you know, I just wrote a book about it. I actually kind of excited about the whole idea, you know. I mean, Nature is the hero.
All right, Michael, hang on with us. We're going to come back in a moment. And I tell you what, let's open up the phone lines and give folks an opportunity to chat with you as well. The next species as we talk about a mass extinction. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM.